Only my dear brothers and sisters. The Apostle Paul says, love is patient, love is kind, and envies no one. Love is never boastful, nor conceited, nor rude, never selfish, not quick to take offence. Love keeps no scores of wrong, does not gloat over other men's sins, but delights in the truth. There is nothing love cannot face. There is no limit to its faith, its hope, and its endurance. And you'll know these words very well, of course, from Paul's letter to the Corinthians in chapter 13. And of course, they always are and continue to be a challenging and high calling, perhaps the highest of our calling. And we've just read ourselves, haven't we, that one of the ways that Jesus wanted to define Peter was, Peter, do you love me? And on each one of those occasions, the Lord says, I want you to feed my sheep. Practical ways that you can show love to the Lord is to help others, to tend them. If we come to John 13, this is Jesus' words on love. Chapter 13 and verse 34 and 35. A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. Jesus tells us a new commandment. Of course, Jesus can't enforce us to do these things, but it's one of his commandments, one of the few that we're called to do by command. And we know that Jesus said these words at the very first breaking of bread. And we know from the other Gospels accounts that at this time there was the real vying for seniority amongst the 12. They wanted positions of authority with Jesus, and they wanted a standing amongst the 12. And so we could ask the question perhaps from John 13, how was it that Jesus had shown love to the 12? Verse 34, love one another as I have loved you. How had Jesus shown love to the disciples? We're not told that he healed any of them, of the 12 at least, physically. He hadn't helped them in any way that we're aware of. He'd helped Peter's mother-in-law. Certainly he'd healed her of a fever. The 12 had been gifted with spirit gifts for a short period, which enabled them to heal the sick folk and to teach the gospel. And in a sense, Peter had asked the question, well, we've left all to follow you, Lord. What shall we have? But perhaps a way to understand how it was that Jesus had loved the 12 and by extension, of course, has loved us or does love us, is that he was leading them to the Father. Jesus was showing disciples what it was to come close to God. He was leading them to God, to come close to him, and to stay in his presence. We just come back to verse 33, and he says something quite startling to the 12. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You shall see me. And as I said to the Jews, where I go, you cannot come. So now I'm saying the same to you. Where I go, you cannot come. Jesus was going to the Father. He was physically to sit at the Father's right hand, and that's true. And yet I believe that Jesus is not speaking about the physical going to the Father, but rather about his place with God in full fellowship, something that he experienced right then. Fellowship with the Father in heart and mind. And we know that God was fully at home in Jesus. He tabernacled, he lived in Jesus. But for the 12, at least at this time, God was not living in them. They were at large a long way away. And we know that because in verse 36, Peter says to Jesus, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered and said, "Where I go, you cannot follow me now, but thou shalt follow me afterwards." Peter would indeed go where Jesus went. Not physically to heaven, not even in crucifixion. But as Peter developed as a disciple, he allowed the mind of Christ to live in him. And perhaps the letters that Peter wrote and his experience in Acts of the Apostles will show us that Peter was moving closer and closer to the Lord. He was indeed following his Lord. But right now, he wasn't ready. He wasn't able, as were the 12. He wasn't able to follow. And of course, Jesus wants the same of us. At times in our lives where I'm going, says Jesus, you can't come. You're not there yet. But you will follow me. And Jesus wants the same for us. He wants us to follow him and to develop his mind as we grow. And so one of the key aspects for each of us is to love, to have love one for another. Thinking again about Paul's closing definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13, there is no limit to love's faith, love's hope, and love's endurance. And so what I'd like to do, just for the balance of the exhortation, is to think about two examples of bringing this message of salvation to each other, to encourage one another to follow Jesus, and perhaps to think about the way that we can bring the message of salvation to others that we come in contact with, to give people hope. And the first example that I've chosen is the feeding of the 5,000. And I'd like to look specifically at the Gospel of Mark's account, although we will look at some comparisons. So in Mark chapter 6, and particularly Mark 6, because I want for us to notice the intensity of the work that Jesus had given to the disciples, the busyness of life that Mark outlines for us at this time. So the background to the miracle of the loaves and fish, as I said, is a time of real busyness and action, and the time of not only Jesus, who's always busy, but in the time of the apostles. So back in verse 7, Jesus called to him the 12 and began to send them forth two by two and gave them power over unclean spirits. So here's this gift of the Spirit for this period. In verse 13, they cast out many devils and anointed with oil many that were sick and healed them. And there's two aspects to that, isn't there? There's the miraculous use of the Spirit power, and there's the use of prayer and anointing with oil. Healing comes with that aspect as well. But the apostles went out as a group in twos, and they commissioned by Jesus to many towns, it would seem, from Matthew's account. But it's about the same time that Herod takes John and has him killed. Verse 17. Herod himself had sent forth and laid hold upon John, bound him in prison for Herodias' sake. And then the account goes on to tell us about the death of John. And it would seem that the wonderful news of the apostles' success they bring back to Jesus in teaching and healing coincides with this news that Jesus receives of the death of John. Verse 29. when his disciples, that's John's disciples, heard of John's death, they came and took up his corpse and laid it in a tomb. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And so Mark coincides these two, the bad news of John's death, the good news of the work of the apostles. And I think the 12 have had a very, very busy time. They're worn out. And as evening comes, they come to Jesus. After the background, of course, is that Jesus says, I want you to come aside now from this place to a desert place. Verse 31, come yourselves apart to a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and had no leisure so much as to eat. So it's this really busy time. But as evening comes on, Jesus has had compassion on the people, these great crowds that have followed him around the lake. The disciples are tired and worn out, understandably. And in verse 36, send them away, they said, the crowds, that they may go into the country round about, into the villages, and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. Just send them away was the apostles' call to Jesus. Let them get themselves something to eat or tea. And I can understand their thinking. It's been a busy day. Actually, it's been a busy week in the Lord's work. There's been a death in the family. Of course, John was related to Jesus, and Jesus was, of course, related to the apostles. So there's a family connection amongst the 12. We've been busy here all day, Lord. Send them away. But it's very clear that Jesus would not. He answered verse 37 and said to them, you give them to eat. And they say unto him, shall we go and buy 200 penny worth of bread and give them to eat? And here is the key message. Jesus works the miracle, the ensuing miracle of bread and loaves, based on the initiative of the 12. Jesus says in verse 38, how many loaves do you have? And they said, well, 5 and 2 fish. And that's the key. Jesus worked his miracle based on what the disciples could bring to him. Jesus multiplied the bread and fish to feed 5,000 men and, of course, women and children that were there. Likewise, Jesus can create a miracle if we bring what we have to him in faith. 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed such a great crowd of people. And yet Jesus can work in that. What can we bring to Jesus? He can work in that if we bring it in faith. If we come across briefly to John's account, he gives us some helpful detail. John chapter 6. And in verse 5 and 6. John tells us that when Jesus had lifted his eyes and saw a great company come unto him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? And so we've seen that it's Philip specifically that Jesus is looking for an answer. And Philip said, Jesus said this to prove Philip, for he himself knew what he would do. Jesus already knew what he would do, but he wanted to see what the disciples would do. And that's another key for us. He had the salvation, he had the plan. But he needed to have the disciples involved in the miracle. He needed to increase their awareness and understanding. Where shall we buy bread? He says to Philip. Philip's a local man. He's from that area. He would know. John's account doesn't tell us about the apostles' call to send the people away. Rather, he records Jesus probing for solutions. So what can we learn? Well, Jesus knows the solution to our difficulties. But what are the choices that we will make? Will we send people away because the problem is supposedly insurmountable? Or will we bring what we have as a solution? Well, here it is, Lord. This boy, he's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. He's willing to share. Perhaps you can help here. So Jesus was able to work. Jesus' understanding was that everyone comes to him in faith. And if we look at verse 37 of John 6, all that the Father giveth me shall come to me, and him that comes to me I will in no wise cast out. And so we understand from the other Gospels that the apostles wanted to send people away. And Jesus is saying in verse 37, people that come to me, I won't cast them out. For I came down from heaven not to do mine own will, but the will of him that sent me. And this is the Father's will which hath sent me, that of all which he hath given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up again at the last day. So losing something in life is one thing, but losing something in death is quite another. And Jesus says, I won't lose anything in life or in death. In resurrection, I will raise it up again at the last day. The crowd themselves wanted to know what it was that they needed to do to work the works of God. What is it you need to do, Lord? And Jesus is very clear. Verse 29, this is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom ye have sent. To have faith, believe. That's the work that we're called to do, to believe. Well, our last example is back in the Gospel of Matthew. It's also back in chapter 15, it's also a link in the sense that here again is another incident of apostles wanting to send someone away. And we're looking at verse 21 of Matthew 15, and again, to remind ourselves, back in chapter 14 is the feeding of the 5,000. So very soon after the same incident, send the people away, Lord, let them go into the towns to buy food. Another incident comes where they also want to send people away. And let's think about this in a short little reading in Matthew 15. And Jesus went thence and departed to the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast and cried to him, saying, have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, send her away, for she crieth after us. And he answered and said, I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. And he answered and said, it is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to dogs. She said, truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. Then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. It's a difficult story, the story of the woman of Canaan, and what are we to make of it? Her call for help. It would seem at a surface level that Jesus ignores her and tells her that she isn't on his list of people that he was sent to help. And finally, that helping her might deprive others of their rights, their food in Israel. But surely, of course, surely this goes against everything that we've just considered. Thinking about Jesus not sending anyone away that would come to him. And of course, there is a lesson. The apostles had heard the lesson. Well, don't send them away. You do something for them. You can help them. and I can multiply that miracle. All that come to me I will not cast out. And this is fresh in the minds of the apostles at this time. And I think the solution is in back in verse 23. The solution to the conundrum. The apostles say, send her away, for she crieth after us. The woman seemingly was a problem to them, not to Jesus. It's the disciples that want to send this poor, helpless woman with a desperate need away. Send her away. The woman comes to Jesus in verse 22 with her plea. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil, she said to Jesus. But the disciples see her as a pest and an annoyance. And she cries after us, but she hadn't. She cried after Jesus. I think again, Jesus knew exactly what he would do in the situation, but he wants to test. Firstly, the apostles. He wants to test them to see if they've learned anything from the feeding of the 5,000. And he shows them, I think, the harshness of their call to send her off by mirroring their sentiments back to them. So in a sense, Jesus is playing along with their hardness and prejudice. Notice in verse 23, he doesn't answer her call for help, but he lets the disciples give an answer. And I can just imagine the disciples, perhaps I can imagine myself being there nodding in agreement, as Jesus says, I'm not sent to you, I'm sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Perhaps they would nod their heads in agreement. But don't you think their conscience would be pricked and their hard hearts touched when the woman in verse 25 falls at his feet, and that's Mark's account of it, falls at his feet and worships him and asks again for help. Lord, she says in verse 25, help me. And lastly, the woman's understanding of the plan and mercy of God is shown as evidence to the 12 that her faith indeed was great. What she desired, the divine help she requested and then begged for her daughter, was the will of God. Great is your faith, Jesus says in verse 28. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And so if I was an apostle, I'd perhaps be hanging my head in a bit of shame as I witnessed the faith and belief and endurance of this woman, a Gentile woman, no doubt. And I'm sure the story has strong links to the account of the woman taken in adultery in John chapter 8. Of course, we won't have time to go there. Jesus, again, is silent as the accusations ring around about this woman caught in the very act. But he says nothing, nothing at all. And each man is convicted in his own conscience when he says, well, those of you without sin, you should cast the first stone. So as we come to break bread together, let us remember again the love of Jesus toward us. His love is patient. His love is kind. As he leads each of us closer and closer to his Father and our discipleship.